Is there a desire in you to not just attend revival, but live in revival? Welcome to the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Isaiah Saldivar. I've been in revival for the last 10 years, as well as traveling and being a part of many revivals throughout the United States. I'm going to be sharing with you how to live a radical lifestyle of revival on a daily basis. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the broadcast. Hopefully this pops up that we're live. My restream is not working, so that's good. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Join on in. Let me see if we're live. Please tell me this worked. Oh, did I not save the new one? Hold on, hold on, hold on. Let's see. Did we save the wrong one? Is anybody there? Hello? Hello? Wait, we are there. No, I think it's working. I think just my chat's not working. But it shows that we're live from my phone. Hello, hello. Is anybody out there? We can hear you? Okay. It's just my chat's messed up. I long story short, I was trying to fix my stream because I was having tech difficulties and something happened to my chat. So let me try to fix this. Give me 1 second. I'm going to tell you guys why I'm late. You're going to laugh at me. But it's no laughing matter. I'm going to tell you in a second once I get my chat working. Come on, restream chat, work. Hello. All right, we're working. Okay, let me tell you why I was late today. I was 2 minutes late for a reason. Dude. Okay, so my nose was feeling stuffed up. I'm like, okay, I'm going to read for the next hour. I better unstuff my nose. Excuse me, too. I'm having issues now, guys. This is actually not funny. And so I got my this little like inhaler thing. I ripped off the label, so you can't see it, but it's a Vicks. It's a Vicks nose thing, right? So it's like if you have your nose blocked, you go like this. You stick that up your nose. I mean, can you see that? Oh, wait, there we go. And you inhale it, and then it's just Vicks. It clears your nose. Well, I... Give me a second here. I'm struggling. I went to inhale it. I put it in my nose right before I hit live. And I like... Usually you just do it lightly. You just breathe, breathe. And I was like, I'm going to extra unblock my nose. And I went as hard as I could. I can't even do it right now. I sniffed as hard as I could. And guys, I literally felt the flames of Sodom and Gomorrah in my brain. It was like Sodom and Gomorrah all over again in my brain cells. It hurts so bad. My eyes started instantly watering. It hurts right now. Hold on. I can literally taste it. And I felt like my brain was getting burned. So right now, I can't really breathe through my nose because it's burning with Vicks. I got the Vicks curse on me right now. So that's why I was late. I'm trying to see if I can even make it right now. Oh man, it's hot. It's spicy. The spicy meatball in my nose. Okay. So I've changed a few things. Number one, I put... Oh my goodness, this is bad. Give me a second, guys. Okay. It's all cleansing. It's all cleansing. Don't do what I did. Don't go as hard as you can sniff up. Anyways. Yeah. Oh, you did the same thing, Emily? I've used this so many times, but I've never done it like that. And yeah, it was not good. It's currently burning my throat. I put the book that we're on in chapter right here on the bottom in green. So hopefully that helps people. They're like, where are we? It'll move as we move. So I added that. And then I also added, anyways, the stream should be way clearer today because I changed up some bit rate and some encoders and all that. So let me know if it looks clearer today because I'm experimenting with some stuff. I ran some test streams earlier this afternoon. So hopefully it's a lot clearer, looks a lot better, sounds better. We're running at a lot higher bit rate. Okay, but let's get started here. After all the trauma that I've been through today, we're going to get started here in Judges chapter 16. Bear with me. I already tried blowing my nose. I already did all that. So we're going to figure it out. It's going to work out. It's going to work out. All right, so load in the chat. Let's get started here. Never a dull moment here. Look, and I was so quick to throw my shirt on. I didn't even do this. Struggle is real out here, guys. My collar was all messed up. Liz was like, fix your collar. All right, here we go. Judges chapter 16, verse 1. One day, Samson went to the Philistine town of Gaza and spent the night with a prostitute. Well, I mean, that's one way to start. We're just going right in. All right. Samson went, spent the night. If you have kids watching, this is the Bible. I don't know what to tell you. Word soon spread that Samson was there, so the men of Gaza gathered together and waited all night at the town gates. Remember, they're trying to kill Samson, if you're not tracking. They kept quiet during the night, saying to themselves, when the light of morning comes, we will kill him. But Samson stayed in bed until only midnight. Okay, so a little one-night stand. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the town gate, including the two posts, and lifted them up, bar and all. He put them on his shoulders and carried them all the way to the top of the hill across from Hebron. So he literally put the town gates on his back. I'm getting the cleansing of the Lord right now down my sinuses, my throat. The devil is a liar. Sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah, who lived in the Valley of Sorek. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, "Entice Samson to tell you what makes him so strong and how he can be overpowered and tied up securely. Then each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." Now, I know a lot of us look at Samson and think he's like this big buff guy. Obviously, he wasn't this big buff guy, or no one would be wondering where his strength came from. If he was buff, everyone would know that his strength came from his muscles. He obviously wasn't this big buff guy because everyone's confused how he's so strong. Where is his strength coming from? "Then each of us will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me what makes you so strong and what it would take to tie you up securely." Red flag. Samson replied, "If I were tied up with 7 new bowstrings that have not been dried, I would become as weak as anyone else." So the Philistine rulers brought Delilah 7 new bowstrings and she tied Samson up with them. I mean, come on now, the red flags. She tied up Samson with them. She had hidden some men in one of the inner rooms of her house and she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But Samson snapped the bowstrings as a piece of string snaps when it's burned by fire. So the secret of his strength was not discovered. Afterward, Delilah said to him, "You've been making fun of me and telling me lies. Now please tell me how you can be tied up securely." Samson replied, "If I were tied up with brand new ropes that had never been used, I'd become as weak as everyone else." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him up with them. The men were hiding in the inner room as before, and again Delilah cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But again, Samson snapped the ropes from his arms as if they were thread. Bro, do you not realize your wife is your girlfriend or whoever this is tying you up? Then Delilah said, "You've been making fun of me and telling me lies. Now tell me how you can be tied up securely." Samson said, "If you were to weave the 7 braids of my hair into fabric on your loom and tighten it with the loom shuttle, I would become as weak as anyone else." So while he slept, Delilah wove the 7 braids of his hair into the fabric. Then she tightened it with the loom shuttle. Again, she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." But Samson woke up, pulled back the loom shuttle, and yanked his hair away from the loom and the fabric. Then Delilah pouted, "How can you tell me I love you when you don't share your secrets with me? You've made fun of me 3 times now, and you still haven't told me what makes you so strong." She tormented him with nagging day after day until he was finally sick to death of it. Excuse me. Oh, yeah. Sponsored by Vicks today, guys. That is just burning. Finally, Samson shared his secret with her. "My hair has never been cut," he confessed, "for I was dedicated to God as a Nazirite from birth. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I'd become as weak as everyone else." Delilah realized he had finally told her the truth. So she sent the Philistine rulers. "Come back one more time," she said, "for he's finally told me his secret." So the Philistine rulers returned with the money in their hands. Delilah lulled Samson asleep with his head on her lap. And then she called in a man to shave off his 7 locks of hair. In this way, she began to bring him down, and his strength left him. Then she cried out, "Samson, the Philistines have come to capture you." When he woke up, he thought, "I'll do as before and shake myself free." But he didn't realize the Lord had left him. Saddest sentence in the Bible right there. He didn't realize the Lord has left him. How sad is that when the Lord leaves you and you don't even realize it? So the Philistines captured him and gouged out his eyes. They took him to Gaza, where he was bound with bronze chains and forced him to grind grain in the prison. But before long, his hair began to grow back. Oh, come on, Holy Ghost. Someone's hair is about to grow back today. You've went to Delilah's barbershop one too many times. You've been getting your hair cut by the spirit of compromise, but the Lord says it's time for your hair to grow back, son. The Philistine rulers held a great festival, offering sacrifices and praising their god Dagon. They said, "Our God has given us victories over our enemy Samson." When the people saw him, they praised their god, saying, "Our God has delivered our enemy to us. The one who killed so many of us is now in our power." Half drunk by now, the people demanded, "Bring out Samson so he can amuse us." So he was brought from the prison to amuse them, and they had him stand between the pillars supporting the roof. Samson said to the young servant who was leading him by the hand, "Place my hands against the pillars that hold up the temple. I want to rest against them." Now the temple was completely filled with people. All the Philistine rulers were there and about 3,000 men and women on the roof who were watching as Samson amused them. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, "Sovereign Lord, remember me again, O God. Please strengthen me one more time. With one blow, let me pay back the Philistines for the loss of my 2 eyes." Then Samson put his hands on the two center pillars that held up the temple, pushing against them with both hands. He prayed, "Let me die with the Philistines." And the temple crashed down on the Philistine rulers and all the people, so he killed more when he died than during his entire lifetime. Later, his brothers and other relatives went down to get his body, and they took him back home and buried him between Zorah and Eshtol, where his father Manoah was buried. Samson had judged Israel, for 20 years. Ooh. I'm being cleansed. All right. Chapter 17. There was a man named Micah who lived in the hill country of Ephraim. One day he said to his mother, "I heard you place a curse on the person who stole 1,100 pieces of silver from you. Well, I have the money, and I was the one that took it." "The Lord bless you for admitting it," his mother replied. And he returned the money to her, and she said, "I now dedicate these silver coins to the Lord. In honor of my son, I will have an image carved and an idol cast." So when he returned the money to his mother, she took 200 silver coins and gave them to a silversmith who made them into an image and an idol. All right, Vix, I hear you. And they were placed in Micah's house. Micah set up a shrine for the idol, and he made a sacred ephod and some household idols. Then he installed one of his sons as his personal priest. All right, I got to tell you guys real quick. We're on verse 6. The other day, I forgot to tell you guys, I was about to go live, and I ran to the restroom real quick, and I shut my studio door, and I didn't realize I had locked it from the inside, and I locked myself out of my studio as I was supposed to go live, and I was freaking out because it's like the special key that we don't even have. We've lost it a long time ago. My wife and kids were laughing. I could not get back into my studio. And then we finally found like a little wire hanger and I got in. It was dramatic and funny. And I forgot to tell you guys. And I was thinking about how every time I'm about to go live, I do something like that, that makes it crazy. And yeah, so don't lock yourself out before you go live. In those days, Israel had no king. All the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. One day, a young Levite who had been living in Bethlehem in Judah arrived in that area. He had left Bethlehem in search of another place to live, and as he traveled, he came to the hill country of Ephraim. He happened to stop at Micah's house as he was traveling through. "Where are you from?" Micah asked him. He replied, "I'm a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm looking for a place to live." Guys, my sinuses are going to be clear until 2028. I am not kidding. I have never breathed so good. I could literally smell colors right now. I'm breathing so good. This is crazy. "Stay here with me," Micah said, "and you can be a father and a priest to me. I'll give you 10 pieces of silver, a year plus change of clothes, and your food." The Levite agreed, and the young man became like one of Micah's sons. So Micah installed the Levites as his personal priest, and he lived in Micah's house. "I know the Lord will bless me now," Micah said, "because I have a Levite serving as my priest." Chapter 18. Oh, we're moving strong today. Now, in those days, Israel had no king, and the tribe of Dan was trying to find a place where they could settle, for they had not yet been moved in the land assigned to them when the land was divided among the tribes of Israel. So the men of Dan chose from their clans 5 capable warriors from the towns of Zorah and Eshtol to scout out a land for them to settle in. When these warriors arrived in the hill country of Ephraim, they came to Micah's house and spent the night there. While at Micah's house, they recognized the young Levite's accent. So they went and asked him, "Who brought you here and what are you doing in this place? Why are you here?" He told them about his agreement with Micah and that he'd been hired as Micah's personal priest. Then they said, "Ask God whether or not our journey will be successful." "Go in peace," the priest replied, "for the Lord is watching over your journey." So the 5 men went on to the town of Lash, where they noticed the people living carefree lives, like the Sidonians. They were peaceful and secure. The people were also wealthy because their land was very fertile, and they lived a great distance from Sidon and had no allies nearby, Sidon. When the men returned to Zorah and Eshtol, their relative asked them, "What did you find?" The men replied, "Come on, let's attack them. We've seen the land and it's very good. What are you waiting for? Don't hesitate to go and take possession of it. When you get there, you'll find the people living carefree lives, for God has given us a spacious and fertile land lacking in nothing." So 600 men from the tribe of Dan, armed with weapons for war, set out from Zorah and Eshtol. They camped at a place west of Kiriath Jearim in Judah, which is called Mehene Dan to this day. All right, cool. Then they went on from there into the hill country of Ephraim and went into the house of Micah. The 5 men who had scouted out the land around Lash explained to the others, "These buildings contain a sacred ephod, as well as some household idols, a carved image, and a cast idol. What do you think you should do?" Then the 5 men turned off the road and went over to Micah's house, where the young Levite lived, and greeted him kindly. As the 600 armed warriors from the tribe of Dan stood at the entrance of the gate, the 5 scouts entered the shrine and removed the carved image, the sacred ephod, and the household idols, and the cast idol. Meanwhile, the priest was standing at the gate with 600 armed warriors. When the priest saw the men carrying all the sacred objects out of Micah's shrine, he said, "What are you doing?" "Be quiet and come with us," they said. "Be a father and a priest to all of us. Isn't it better to be a priest for an entire tribe and clan than one household of just one man? The young priest was quite happy to go with them. So he took along the sacred ephod, the household idols, and the carved image. They turned and started on their way again, placing their children, livestock, and possessions in front of them. Then the people from the tribe of Dan were quite a distance from Micah's house. The people who lived near Micah came chasing after them. They were shouting as they caught up with them. The men of Dan turned around and said to Micah, "What's the matter? Why have you called these men together and chased after us like this?" "What do you mean, what's the matter?" Micah replied. "You've taken all the gods I've made and my priest, and I have nothing left." The men of Dan said, "Watch what you say. There are some short-tempered men around here who might get angry and kill you and your family." So the men of Dan continued on their way, and when Micah saw that there were too many of them to attack, he turned around and went home. Then with Micah's idols and his priest, the men of Dan came to the town of Lash, whose people were peaceful and secure. They attacked with swords and burned the town to the ground. There was no one to rescue the people, for they lived a great distance from Sidon and had no allies nearby. This happened in the valley near Beth Rehob, when the people of the tribe of Dan rebuilt the towns and lived there. Then the people, yeah. Sometimes it doesn't make sense because I'm not reading it right. They renamed the town Dan after their ancestor, Israel's son, but it originally had been called Laish. Then they set up the carved image and they appointed Jonathan, son of Gershom, son of Moses, as their priest. This family continued as priests for the tribe of Dan until the exile. So Micah's carved image was worshipped by the tribe of Dan as long as the tabernacle of God remained at Shiloh. We are NLT. Chapter 19, The Levite and His Concubine. Now in those days Israel had no king. There was a man from the tribe of Levi living in a remote area of the hill country of Ephraim. One day he brought home a woman from Bethlehem in Judah to be his concubine, but she became very angry and returned to her father's house in Bethlehem. After about 4 months, her husband set out for Bethlehem to speak personally to her and persuade her to come back. He took with him a servant and a pair of donkeys. When he arrived at her father's house, her father saw him and welcomed him. Excuse me. All right, just continuing to clear there. Her father urged him to stay a while, so he stayed there 3 days, eating and drinking and sleeping there. On the fourth day, the man was up early, ready to leave, but the woman's father said to his son-in-law, "Have something to eat before you go." So the two men sat together and had something to eat and drink. Then the woman's father said, "Please stay another night and enjoy yourself." This man got up to leave, but his father-in-law kept urging him to stay, so he finally gave in and stayed the night. On the morning of the fifth day, he was up early again, ready to leave, and again the woman's father said, "Have something to eat, then you can leave later this afternoon." So they had another day of feasting. Later, as the man and his concubine and servant were preparing to leave, his father-in-law said, "Look, it's almost evening. All right, bro, just chill. Stay the night and enjoy yourself. Tomorrow you can get up and be on your way." But this time the man was determined to leave. So he took his two saddled donkeys and his concubine and headed in the direction of Jebus, that is, Jerusalem. It was late in the day when they neared Jebus, and the man's servant said to him, "Let's stop at this Jebusite town and spend the night there." "No," his master said, "we can't stay in this foreign town where there's no Israelites. Instead, we'll go on to Gibeah. Come on, let's try to go as far as Gibeah or Ramah, and we'll spend the night in one of those towns." So they went on, and the sun was setting as they came to Gibeah, a town in the land of Benjamin. So they stopped there to spend the night. They rested in the town square, but no one took them in for the night. That evening, an old man came home from his work in the fields. He was from the hill country of Ephraim, but he was living in Gibeah, where the people were from the tribe of Benjamin. When he saw the traveler sitting in the town square, he asked them where they were from and where they were going. "We've been in Bethlehem in Judah," the man replied. "We're on our way to a remote area in the hill country of Ephraim, which is my home. I traveled to Bethlehem and now I'm returning home, but no one has taken us in for the night. Even though we have everything we need, we have straw and feed for our donkeys and plenty of bread and wine for ourselves, you're welcome to stay with me," the old man said. "I will give you anything you might need, but whatever you do, do not spend the night in the square." So he took them home with him and fed the donkeys. After they washed their feet and ate and drank together, while they were enjoying themselves, a crowd of troublemakers from the town surrounded the house. They began beating at the door and shouting to the old man, "Bring out the man who's staying with you so we can have sex with him." Okay, I wasn't ready for that. Sorry, threw me off. The old man stepped aside to talk to them. "No, my brothers, do not do such an evil thing, for this man is a guest in my house and such thing would be shameful. Here, take my virgin daughter and this man's concubine. I will bring them out to you." This is just like exactly what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah. "And you can abuse them and do whatever you like, but don't do such a shameful thing to this man." But they wouldn't listen, so the Levite took hold of his concubine and pushed her out the door. The men of the town abused her all night, taking turns raping her until morning. Finally, at dawn, they let her go. At daybreak, the woman returned to the house where her husband was staying. She collapsed at the door and of the house and lay there until it was light. Man, that's brutal. When her husband opened the door to leave, there lay his concubine with her hands on the threshold. He said, "Get up, let's go," but there was no answer, so he put her body on the donkey and took her home. When he got home, he took a knife and cut his concubine's body into 12 pieces. Okay. Wow, plot twist there. Then he sent one piece to each tribe throughout the entire territory of Israel. Everyone who saw it said, "Such a horrible crime has not been committed in all the time since Israel left Egypt. Think about it. What are we going to do? Who's going to speak up?" Chapter 20. Then the Israelites were united as one man, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south, including those from across the Jordan in the land of Gilead. The entire community assembled in the presence of the Lord at Mizpah. The leaders of all the people and all the tribes of Israel, 400,000 warriors armed with swords, took their positions in the assembly of the people of God. Word soon reached the land of Benjamin that the other tribes had gone up to Mizpah. The Israelites then asked how this terrible crime had happened. The Levite, the husband of the woman who had been murdered, said, "My concubine and I came to spend the night in Gibeah, a town that belongs to the people of Benjamin. That night, some of the leading citizens of Gibeon surrounded the house, planning to kill me, and they raped my concubine until she was dead. So I cut her body into 12 pieces, and I sent them throughout the territory assigned to Israel, for these men have committed a terrible and shameful crime. Now then, all of you, the entire community of Israel, must decide here and now what should be done about this." And all the people rose to their feet in unison and declared, "None of us will return home. No, not even one of us. Instead, this is what we'll do to Gibeah. We will draw lots to decide who will attack it. 1/10 of the men from each tribe will be chosen to supply the warriors with food, and the rest of us will take revenge on Gibeah of Benjamin for the shameful things they've done in Israel." So all the Israelites were completely united, and they gathered together to attack the town. The Israelites sent messengers to the tribe of Benjamin saying, "What a terrible thing that has been done among you. Give up those evil men, those troublemakers from Gibeah, so we can execute them and purge Israel of this evil." But the people of Benjamin would not listen. Instead, they came from their towns and gathered at Gibeah to fight the Israelites. In all, 26,000 of their warriors, armed with swords, arrived in Gibeah to join the 700 elite troops who lived there. Among Benjamin's elite troops, 700 were left-handed, and each of them could sling a rock and hit a target within a hair's breadth without missing. Israel had 400,000 experienced soldiers, armed with swords, not counting Benjamin's warriors. Before the battle, the Israelites went to Bethel and asked God, "Which tribe should go first and attack the people of Benjamin?" The Lord said, "Judah is to go first." So the Israelites left early the next morning and camped near Gibeah. Then they advanced towards Gibeah to attack the men of Benjamin. But Benjamin's warriors, who were defending the town, came out and killed 22,000 Israelites on the battlefield that day. But the Israelites encouraged each other and took their position again, the same place they had fought the previous day. For they had gone up to Bethel and wept in the presence of the Lord until evening. They asked the Lord, "Should we fight against our relatives from Benjamin again?" And the Lord said, "Go out and fight against them." So the next day they went out again to fight against the men of Benjamin. But the men of Benjamin killed another 18,000 Israelites, all whom were experienced with a sword. Then the Israelites went up to Bethel and wept in the presence of the Lord and fasted until evening. They also brought burnt offerings and peace offerings to the Lord. The Israelites went up seeking direction from the Lord. In those days, the Ark of the Covenant of God was in Bethel. And Phinehas, son of Eleazar, and the grandson of Aaron was the priest. The Israelites asked the Lord, "Should we fight against our relatives from Benjamin again, or should we stop?" And the Lord said, "Go. Tomorrow I'll hand them over to you." So the Israelites set up an ambush all around Gibeah. They went out on the third day and took their positions at the same place as before. When the men of Benjamin came out to attack, they were drawn away from the town. And as they had done before, they began to kill the Israelites. About 30 Israelites died in the open fields along the roads, one leading to Bethel and the other leading back to Gibeah. Then the warriors of Benjamin shouted, "We're defeating them as we did before." But the Israelites had planned in advance to run away so that the men of Benjamin would chase them along the roads and would be drawn away from the town. When the main group of Israelite warriors reached Baal Tamar, they turned and took up their positions. Meanwhile, the Israelites hiding in ambush to the west of Gibeah jumped up to fight. There were 10,000 elite Israelite troops who advanced against Gibeah. The fighting was so heavy that Benjamin didn't realize the impending disaster. So the Lord helped Israel defeat Benjamin. And that day, Israelites killed 25,100 of Benjamin's warriors, all of whom were experienced swordsmen. Then the men of Benjamin saw that they were beaten. The Israelites had retreated from Benjamin's warriors in order to give those hiding in ambush more room to maneuver against Gibeah. Then those who were hiding rushed in from all sides and killed everyone in the town. They had arranged to set up a large cloud of smoke from the town as a signal. When the Israelites saw the smoke, they turned and attacked Benjamin's warriors. By the time Benjamin's warriors had killed about 30 Israelites, and they shouted, "We're defeating them as we did in the first battle." But when the warriors of Benjamin looked up behind them, they saw smoke rising in the sky from every part of the town. The men of Israel turned and attacked. At this point, the men of Benjamin became terrified because they realized disaster was close at hand. So they returned around and fled before the Israelites toward the wilderness. But they couldn't escape the battle, and the people who came out of the nearby towns were also killed. And the Israelites surrounded the men of Benjamin and chased them relentlessly, finally overtaking them east of Gibeah. That day, 18,000 of Benjamin's strongest warriors died in battle. The survivors fled into the wilderness towards the Rock of Rimmon, but Israel killed 5,000 of them along the road. They continued to chase until they had killed another 2,000 near Gidom. So that day, the tribe of Benjamin lost 25,000 strong warriors armed with swords, leaving only 600 men to escape to the Rock of Rimmon, where they lived for 4 months. And the Israelites returned and slaughtered every living thing in all the towns, the people, the livestock, and everything they found. They also burned down all the towns that they came to. Chapter 21. Israel provides wives for Benjamin. The Israelites had vowed at Mizpah, "We will never give our daughters in marriage to a man from the tribe of Benjamin." Now the people went to Bethel and sat in the presence of God until evening, weeping loudly and bitterly. "O Lord God of Israel," they cried out, "why has this happened in Israel? Now one of our tribes is missing from Israel." Early the next morning, the people built an altar and presented their burnt offerings and peace offerings on it. Then they said, "Who among the tribes of Israel did not join us at Mizpah when we held our assembly in the presence of the Lord?" At that time, they'd taken a solemn oath in the Lord's presence, vowing that anyone who refuses to come would be put to death. The Israelites felt sorry for their brother Benjamin and said, "Today one of the tribes of Israel has been cut off. How can we find wives for the few that remain, since we've sworn by the Lord that we will not give our daughters in marriage?" So they asked, "Whom among the tribes of Israel did not join us at Mizpah when we assembled in the presence of the Lord?" And they discovered that no one from Jabesh Gilead had attended the assembly. For after they counted all the people, no one from Jabesh Gilead was present. So the assembly sent 12,000 of their best warriors to Jabesh Gilead with orders to kill everyone there, including the women and children. "This is what you're to do," they said. "Completely destroy all the male and every woman who's not a virgin." Among the residents of Jabesh Gilead, they found 400 young virgins who had never slept with a man, and they brought them to the camp of Shiloh in the land of Canaan. The Israelites assembled and sent a peace delegation to the remaining people of Benjamin who were living at the Rock of Rimmon. Hold on, let me fix my screen here. I was trying something new and I don't like it, so let me fix it. Move this over, pull this down. All right. Much better, much better, much better. All right. Make that smaller. All right, where were we? Oh, right here. Verse 14. Then the men of Benjamin returned to their homes, and the 400 women of Jabesh Gilead who had been spared were given to them as wives, but there were not enough women for all of them. The people felt sorry for Benjamin because the Lord had made this gap among the tribes of Israel. So the elders of the assembly asked, "How can we find wives for the few who remain, since the women of the tribe of Benjamin are dead? There must be heirs of the survivors so that the entire tribe of Israel is not wiped out. But we cannot give them our own daughters in marriage because we've sworn with solemn oath that anyone who does this will fall under God's curse." Then they thought of the annual festival of the Lord held in Shiloh, south of Lebanon, and north of Bethel, along the east of the road that goes from Bethel to Shechem. They told the men of Benjamin who still needed wives, "Go and hide in the vineyards. When you see the young women of Shiloh, come out for their dances. Rush out from the vineyards, and each of you can take one of them home to the land of Benjamin to be your wife. And when their fathers and brothers come out in protest, we will tell them, 'Please be sympathetic. Let them have your daughters, for we didn't find wives for all of them when we destroyed Jabesh Gilead. And we're not guilty of breaking the vow since you didn't actually give your daughters to them in marriage.'" The men of Benjamin did as they were told. Each man caught one of the women as she danced. I mean, that's probably not the best wording. Each man caught one of the women as she danced in the celebration and carried her off to be his wife. They returned to their own land and they rebuilt their towns and lived in them. Then the people of Israel departed by tribes and families and they returned to their own homes. In those days, Israel had no king and the people did whatever seemed right in their own eyes. Naughty, naughty. Don't do what's right in your own eyes. All right. Book of Ruth. Here we go. Chapter 1. Elimelech moves his family to Moab. In the days when judges ruled in Israel, a severe famine came upon the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah left his home and went to live in the country of Moab, taking his wife and two sons. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife was Naomi. Their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in the land of Judah, and when they reached Moab, they settled there. Then Elimelech died, and Naomi was left with her two sons. The two sons married Moabite women. One married a woman named Orpah, and the other married a woman named Ruth. But about 10 years later, Mahlon and Chilion died. This left Naomi alone without her sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had blessed his people in Judah by giving them good crops again, so Naomi and her daughter-in-law got ready to leave Moab to return to her homeland. But on the way, Naomi said to her two daughter-in-laws, "Go back to your mother's homes, and may the Lord reward you for your kindness to your husbands and to me. May the Lord bless you with all security of another marriage." Then she kissed them goodbye and they all broke down and wept. "No," they said, "we want to go with you and to your people." But Naomi replied, "Why would you go with me? Can I still give birth to other sons who can grow up to be your husbands? No, my daughters, return to your parents' homes, for I'm too old to marry again. And if it were possible, and I were to get married tonight and bear sons, then what? Would you wait for them to grow up and refuse to marry someone else? No, of course not, my daughters. Things are far bitter for me than they are for you, because the Lord himself has raised his fist against me." And again they wept together, and Orpah, not Oprah, kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung tightly to Naomi. "Look," Naomi said to her, "your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. You should do the same." But Ruth replied, "Don't ask me to leave you and turn back. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us." When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she said nothing more. So the two of them continued on their journey. When they came to Bethlehem, the entire town was excited by their arrival. "Is it really Naomi?" the woman asked. "Don't call me Naomi," she responded. "Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty God has made life very bitter for me. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer, and the Almighty has sent such great tragedy upon me?" So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by her daughter-in-law Ruth, the young Moabite woman. They arrived in Bethlehem in late spring at the beginning of the barley harvest. Chapter 2. Now there was a wealthy and influential man in Bethlehem named Boaz, who was a relative of Naomi's husband, Elimelech. One day Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go out into the harvest fields to pick up stalks of grain left behind by anyone who is kind enough to let me do it." Naomi replied, "All right, my daughter, go ahead." So Ruth went out to gather grain behind the harvesters, and as it happened, she found herself working in a field that belonged to Boaz, the relative of her father-in-law, Elimelech. While she was there, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you," he said. "The Lord bless you," the harvesters replied. Then Boaz asked his foreman, "Who's that young woman over there? Who does she belong to?" And the foreman replied, "She's the young woman from Moab who came with Naomi. She asked me this morning if she can gather some grain left behind from the harvesters. She's been hard at work ever since, except a few minutes rest in the shelter." Boaz went over and said to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, stay right here. Stay right here with us when you gather grain. Don't go to any other fields. Stay right behind the young women working in the field. See which part of the field they're harvesting and then follow them. I've warned the young men not to treat you roughly. And when you're thirsty, help yourself to the water they've drawn from the well." Ruth fell at his feet and thanked him warmly. "What have I done to deserve such kindness?" she asked. I am only a foreigner." "Yes, I know," Boaz replied, "but I also know about everything you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. I've heard how you left your father and mother and your own land to come here among complete strangers. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come take refuge, reward you fully for what you've done." "I hope to continue to please you, sir," she replied. "You've comforted me by speaking so kindly to me, even though I'm not one of your workers." At mealtime, Boaz called to her, "Come over here and help yourself to some food. You can dip your bread in the sour wine." So she sat with his harvesters, and Boaz gave her some roasted grain to eat. She ate all she wanted and still had some left over. When Ruth went back to work again, Boaz ordered his young men, "Let her gather grain among the sheaves without stopping her, and pull out some heads of barley from the bundles and drop them on purpose for her, and let her pick them up and don't give her a hard time." So Ruth gathered barley there all day, and when she had beaten out the grain that evening, it filled an entire basket. She carried it back into town and showed it to her mother-in-law, and Ruth also gave her the roasted grain that was left over from her meal. "Where did you gather all this grain today?" Naomi asked. "Where did you work? May the Lord bless the one who helped you. So Ruth told her mother-in-law about the man whose field she had worked. She said, the man I worked with today is Boaz. May the Lord bless him. Naomi told her daughter-in-law, he is showing kindness to us all, as well as to your dead husband. That man is one of our closest relatives, one of our family redeemers. Then Ruth said, what's more, Boaz even told me to come back and stay with the harvesters until the entire harvest is completed. Good, Naomi exclaimed. Do as he said, my daughter. Stay with his young women right through the whole harvest. You might be harassed in other fields, but you'll be safe with him. So Ruth worked alongside the women in Boaz's field and gathered grain until the end of the barley harvest. Then she continued working with them through the wheat harvest in the early summer, and all the while she lived with her mother-in-law. Chapter 3. Ruth at the Threshing Floor. One day Naomi said to Ruth, my daughter, it's time that I find a permanent home for you so you'll be provided for. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women. Tonight he'll be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Now do as I tell you. Take a bath and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. Then go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you until he's finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lays down. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. He'll tell you what to do. I'll do everything you say, Ruth replied. So she went down to the She went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. After Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. Then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and laid down. Not sure the uncovering the feet, what that's all about. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman laying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. I'm your servant Ruth, she replied. Spread the corner of your covering over me. You are my family redeemer. Okay, awkward. The Lord bless you, my daughter, Boaz exclaimed. You're showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you've not gone after a young man, whether rich or poor. Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I'll do what is necessary. Everyone in the town knows you're a virtuous woman. But while it's true that I'm one of your family redeemers, there's another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he's willing to redeem you, very well. Let him marry you. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I'll redeem you myself, and I'll lay down here until morning. So Ruth laid at Boaz's feet until morning, but she got it before it was light for people to recognize each other. For Boaz said, no one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor. Then Boaz said to her, bring your cloak and spread it out. He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back. Then he returned to the town. Then Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, and Naomi asked, what happened, my daughter? Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her. Then she added, give me 6 scoops of barley, and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said to her, be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today. Chapter 4. I'm just saying, guys, listen, half the stuff, I don't even know what it means, you know, spread out and give me inherit. I don't know. I don't even know what half the stuff they're... I'm still understanding it as you guys are. I know it's, I understand it's symbolic and it's powerful, but you know, I'm just reading as I'm reading it. Chapter 4. Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then the family redeemer he had mentioned came by. So Boaz called him out. Come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you. So they sat down together. Then Boaz called out 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as a witness. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, you know Naomi, who came from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so you can redeem it if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away because I'm next in line to redeem it after you. The man replied, all right, I'll redeem it. Then Boaz told him, of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way, she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land and the family. Then I can't redeem it, the family redeemer replied, because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land. I can't do it. Now, in those days, it was the custom in Israel for anyone transferring the right of a purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal as he said to Boaz, you buy the land. Then Boaz said to the elders and the crowd standing around, you are witnesses today that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And with the land I've acquired Ruth, and with the land I've acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry the family name of her dead husband and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You are all my witnesses today. Then the elders and all the people standing in the gate replied, we are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nations of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of the ancestor of Perez, the son of Tamar in Judah. Verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth into his home and she became his wife. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman of the town said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age. For he is a son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and has been better than your seven sons." Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she cared for him as if it were her own. Now the neighbor's woman said, "Now at last Naomi has a son again," and they named him Obed, because he became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. This is the genealogical record of their ancestor Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron was the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Amminadab. Amminadab was the father of Nashon. Nashon was the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz. Boaz was the father of Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of David. That's powerful. Today we are going to 1 Samuel chapter 2. All right. And by the way, my mom's in the chat. She always is. Janelle Sergic. That's my mom, if you guys don't know, in the chat. She's going to be doing the reading on Friday. So my mother, the one that brought me into this world, will be reading on Friday's Bible in 90 days. So that's going to be fun. All right, 1 Samuel. We're in a new book here. Chapter 1, Elkanah and his family. There was a man named Elkanah who lived in Ramah in the region of Zup, in the hill country of Ephraim. He was the son of Jeraham, son of Elu, son of Tohu, son of Zup, and son of Ephraim. Elkanah had two wives, Hannah and Peninnah. Peninnah, okay. I wonder if she liked panini sandwiches. Peninnah had children, but Hannah did not. Peninnah. Each year, Elkanah would travel to Shiloh to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of Heaven's armies, the tabernacle. The priests of the Lord at that time were the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas. Oh, we know these guys. Naughty, naughty, naughty. On the days of Elkanah presented his sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to Peninnah and each of their children. And though he loved Hannah, he would give her only one choice portion because the Lord had given her no children. So Peninnah would taunt Hannah and make fun of her because the Lord had kept her from having children. Year after year, it was the same. Peninnah would taunt Hannah as they went to the tabernacle. Each time, Hannah would be reduced to tears and would not even eat. "Why are you crying, Hannah?" Elkanah would ask. "Why aren't you eating? Why are you downhearted because you have no children? You have me. Isn't that better than 10 sons?" I tell my wife that all the time. "You have me. You don't need any more kids. Aren't I better than all the kids?" It's Peninnah. Oh, Peninnah. Thank you for that. We'll just call her Panini for the sake of pronunciation. Once after a sacrificial meal at Shiloh, Hannah got up and went to pray. Eli the priest was sitting at his customary place beside the entrance of the tabernacle. Hannah was in deep anguish, crying bitterly as she prayed to the Lord. And she made this vow, "O Lord of heaven's armies, if you'll look upon my sorrow and answer my prayer and give me a son, then I'll give him back to you. He'll be yours for his entire lifetime. And as a sign that he's been dedicated to the Lord, his hair will never be cut." As she was praying to the Lord, Eli watched her. Seeing her lips moving but hearing no sound, he thought she must be drinking. "Must you come here drunk?" he demanded. "Throw away your wine." "Oh, no, sir. I haven't been drinking wine or anything stronger, but I'm very discouraged, and I was pouring my heart out to the Lord. Don't think I'm a wicked woman, for I've been praying out of great anguish and sorrow." "In that case," Eli said, "go in peace. May the God of Israel grant the request you've asked of him." "Oh, thank you, sir," she exclaimed. Then she went back and began to eat again, and she was no longer sad. The entire family got up the next morning and went to worship the Lord once more. Then they returned home to Ramah. When Elkanah slept with Hannah, the Lord remembered her plea. And in due time, she gave birth to a son. She named him Samuel, for she said, "I asked the Lord for him." That's powerful. The next day, Elkanah and his family went on their annual trip to offer sacrifice to the Lord to keep his vow. But Hannah did not go. She told her husband, "Wait until the boy is weaned. Then I'll take him to the tabernacle and leave him there with the Lord permanently." "Whatever you think is best," Elkanah agreed. "Stay here for now, and may the Lord keep your promise." So she stayed home and nursed the boy until he was weaned. When the child was weaned, Hannah took him to the tabernacle in Shiloh, and they brought him along with a three-year-old bull for the sacrifice and a basket of flour and some wine. After sacrificing the bull, they brought the boy to Eli. "Sir, do you remember me?" Hannah asked. "I'm the very woman who stirred several years ago praying to the Lord. I asked the Lord to give me this boy, and he's granted my request. Now I'm giving him to the Lord, and he'll belong to the Lord his whole life, and they worship the Lord there. This is one of the places we get dedicating our children. Because they did it in the Bible. They would dedicate their kids to the Lord. Hey, I mean, maybe the Lord's speaking right now. Alyssa, I hope you're watching. Chapter 2, Hannah's Prayer of Praise. All right, this is the last chapter we'll be doing for today. Then Hannah prayed. My heart rejoices in the Lord. The Lord has made me strong. Now I have an answer for my enemies. I rejoice because you rescued me. No one is holy like the Lord. There is no one beside you. There is no rock like our God. Stop acting so proud and haughty. Don't speak with such arrogance. For the Lord is a God who knows what you've done. He'll judge your actions. The bow of the mighty is now broken, and those who stumbled are now strong. Those who were well-fed are now starving, and those who are starving are now full. The childless woman now has 7 children, and the woman with many children wastes away. The Lord gives both death and life. He brings some to the grave, but raises others up. The Lord makes some poor and others rich. He brings some down and lifts others up. He lifts up the poor from the dust and the needy from the garbage dump. He sets them among princes, placing them in the seats of honor. For all the earth is the Lord's, and he has set the world in order. He will protect the faithful ones, but the wicked will disappear in darkness. No one will succeed by strength alone. Those who fight against the Lord will be shattered by thunders. He thunders against them from heaven. The Lord judges throughout the earth. He gives power to his king. He increases the strength of his anointed one. Then Elkanah returned home to Ramah without Samuel, and the boy served the Lord by assisting Eli the priest. Now the sons of Eli were scoundrels. Scoundrels. They were little rats who had no respect for the Lord or for their duties as priests. When anyone offered a sacrifice, Eli's sons would send over a servant with a 3-pronged fork. All right. While the meat of the sacrificed animal was still boiling, the servant would stick the fork into the pot and demand that whatever is brought up be given to Eli's sons. All the Israelites who came to worship Shiloh were treated this way. Sometimes a servant would come even before the animal's fat had been burned on the altar, and he'd demand raw meat before it had been boiled so that it could be used for roasting. The man offering the sacrifice might reply, "Take as much as you want. The fat must be burned first." Then the servant would demand, "No, give it to me now or I'll take it by force." So the sin of these young men was very serious in the Lord's sight. So they treated the Lord's offerings with contempt. But Samuel, though he was only a boy, served the Lord. He wore a linen garment like that of a priest. Each year his mother made a small coat for him and brought it to him when she came with her husband for the sacrifice. Before they returned home, Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, "May the Lord God with your other children take to the place, take the place of this one she gave to the Lord." And the Lord blessed Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. Meanwhile, Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. Now Eli was very old, and he was aware of what his sons were doing to the people of Israel. He knew, for instance, that his sons were seducing the young women who assisted at the entrance of the temple. I mean, these boys were filthy. These were dirty little rats. Eli said to them, "I've been hearing reports from all over the people of the wicked things that you're doing. Why do you keep sinning? You must stop, my sons. The report I hear among the Lord's people are not good. If someone sins against another person, God can mediate for the guilty party. But if someone sins against the Lord, who can intercede?" But Eli's sons wouldn't listen to their father, for the Lord was already planning to put them to death. Ooh, that's not good. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel grew taller and grew in favor with the Lord and with the people. One day, a man of God came to Eli and gave him this message from the Lord. "I revealed myself to your ancestors when they were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt. I chose your ancestors, Aaron, from among all the tribes of Israel to be my priests, to offer sacrifices on my altar, to burn incense, and to wear priestly vests as he served me. And I was assigned the sacrificial offerings to you priests. So why do you scorn my sacrifices and offerings? Why do you give your sons more honor than you give me? For you and they have become fat from the best offerings of Israel. Therefore, the Lord God of Israel says, I promise that your branch of tribe of Levi would always be my priest, but I'll honor those who honor me, and I'll despise those who think lightly of me." Ooh, what do you think about that, chat? God says, "I'll despise those that think lightly of me. The time is coming when I'll put an end to your family, so it will no longer serve as my priest. All the members of your family will die before their time, and none will reach old age. You'll watch with envy as I pour out prosperity on the people of Israel, but no members of your family will ever live out their days. The few not cut off from serving at my altar will survive, but only as their eyes can go blind and their hearts break, and their children will die a violent death. And to prove what I've said will come true, I will cause your 2 sons, Hophni and Phinehas, to die on the same day. Then I will raise up a faithful priest who will do what I desire. I will establish his family, and they will be priests to my anointed kings forever. Then all of your surviving family will bow before him, begging for money and food. Please, they will say, give us jobs among the priests so we'll have enough to eat. Oh, I love this. Tomorrow's is going to be good. The Lord speaks to Samuel. This is a great, great story here. All right, that is our 90 day for today. Make sure that you guys check it off your box. Let me go do this. Make sure that you guys check it off on your little app. Go to your app, check off the box, boom, boom, boom. And then tomorrow we will be doing 1 Samuel chapter 2 to 1 Samuel chapter 15. Oh, the burn's finally gone. Oh man, that was a strong burn. That gave me a headache. That burn of that Vicks rub. That's not good. Don't do that. I'm not doing that again. Today was awesome, guys. What'd you guys think about today? Great stuff. My mom is reading Friday, which will be fun. My mom will be doing the reading Friday, yes. Yes, 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 yes. Is this in frame? Oh, it is. My bottle is in frame. Okay, cool. Thank you guys for partnering. Also, if you monthly partner, we have a prayer call every Thursday at 1 p.m. and then we go into our Bible reading at 2 p.m. Can you guys know a quality difference? Because I'm doing a different encoder, a different bitrate. I changed up all my settings. So let me know if you notice it's much clearer now than, let's say, 2 days ago or yesterday. Hopefully it's clear. It's running smooth, so I'm happy about that. I pretty much doubled everything, so it should be a lot clearer. You'll watch the replay? Yeah, everything's on the replay. Yeah, those boys are dirty little rats. Seriously, though. They're dirty. The Bible says scoundrels. They're little scoundrels. So much good stuff in there. Yes, 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 yes. Excited to hear your mom. It's going to be great. Neti Pot. Is that the one that... No, that's not. I know what a neti pot is. There's one that you put in your nose. It's like a device, and it like cleanses your nose and then shoots it back in that little reservoir. You guys know what I'm talking about? It's like a nose irrigator, and it cleans out all your sinuses. I used to do that a little bit here and there, and then one time I did it, and I think I did it the wrong way. Like, I didn't close my nostril. There's like a special way you have to do it, and the liquid went into my eardrum, and all night, it was seriously one of the worst pains of my life, all night long, I was just, my ear was burning. It was like, it was throbbing. It was hurting so bad. Yeah, it's clear. Okay, cool. Little scoundrels. Nasty little rat boys. Yes. Much clearer. Okay, cool. Hopefully I'll keep doing it like it. Jared said clean like my third shot drop. I mean, I don't know how clean that is, but okay. Kidding, Jared. I'm just kidding, bro. There's still time for you. There's still hope for your pickleball career, Jared. We just got to get some drilling in, bro. Come on, get serious. My mom's reading Friday. A nose irrigator. Yeah. Oh man, that thing hurt me bad. My sinuses are so clear right now, though. Pastor, I wish that during the reading you could have teachable moments. I try to stop here and there, but because it's already so much reading, if I start trying to like teach and preach, it'll just extend it so long. But I'll do better at stopping and sharing as we go. I know some people like it, some people don't. I think probably more people would want me to do that than would not want me to, but I'll do it as much as I can. It's kind of hard though on some of these because it's like, you know, some of it is just, yeah. And I've preached a lot of these stories. So like in my mind, I'm thinking about all my sermon points when I preach these, and I'm trying not to like start preaching and teaching while I'm reading, but I'll do it here and there. Oh, was that, am I skipping frames now? Skippity skippity. Heard you preach at Glad Tidings. That's awesome. I miss Glad Tidings. Glad Tidings is amazing. Jared said, once the weather warms up, come on, bro. We got to be hardcore. Guys, I sprained my wrist. How lame is this? I sprained my wrist playing pickleball on Monday. So, be praying for my wrist. Lord, heal my wrist so I can play pickleball again. Yeah, my wrist got sprained. I didn't even know that was possible, but it is. Preach on Eli and Samuel. We like the Isaiah bonus. Okay, thanks. Oh, man, so clear. All right, I have to get off here in a minute because I'm taking Justice to flag football. She's doing girls flag football practice today, so. The weather's amazing. I'm not going to lie. It's sunny for the next 10 days. It's like 70, 80, 70 degrees. Beautiful. Beautiful. Negative 20 wind chill. Oh, it's like 70 degrees and sunny out in California. Look, we pay a lot of money in taxes. We have like the highest tax in the country. We're a second highest income tax in the country. We have all these lame politics in California, but our weather, chef's kiss. The weather is amazing. There's no cold in California. We don't even know what cold is. We're like freezing when it's 60 degrees. You always crack me up, Isaiah. Oh, I'm glad I can make you laugh. We're getting older. I know. We're getting so old. I could literally tell, guys. Like, I'm not even lying. I could start seeing, like, I'm getting, like, wrinkles in my face. You know, some of you are like, no. But, you know, these lights make my face look a lot cleaner and smoother. But I can notice, like, from my old live streaming, like, 6 years ago till now, I'm like, oh, I got, like, a bunch of new wrinkles now. But I don't care. I think growing older is cool. And I think it looks good. I don't care. I will never be the person that has, like, you know, all the Botox. And, you know, the guys that try to, like, stay young and they get Botox. I don't care. Let the wrinkles come. Let the gray hair come. I do not care. But one thing I will say, if I ever started to bald at all, shaving it all, shiny bald. If I ever got any bald patches, shaving it all off. I'm not going to hang on to the hair. I'll just shave it all. But my grandfather was like 80 years old and still had a full head of hair. So I'm pretty sure that that's not going to happen to me. But if it did, I'm just going to shave it off there. You know what I'm saying? All right. I love you guys. Salute. I'll see you guys tomorrow at 2:00. And then we have the prayer call. Then we have the reading. Wait, is tomorrow Thursday? Yeah, it is. Prayer call, then reading. And then tomorrow night, I'm taking the girls to roller skating rink, which the church, that's going to be very fun. So our church is going doing like a kids roller skating. That's going to be fun. And then Friday, my mom will do the reading. Saturday, we're busy all day. And then Sunday, I'm preaching Sunday in Antioch. So if you're in California, Sunday morning, 9 a.m., Antioch, California, go to my website, isaiahsaldivar.com/schedule, and find the schedule there. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever, we don't really have like hair loss in our family at all. So I don't think I'll ever go bald, but you never know. And my hair is so thick, I don't even think my hair could fall out, so thick. All right, anyways, love you guys, appreciate you guys. Partner with us, we're viewer supported, so we're only able to do this because of you guys. I thank you guys so much, and I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Revival Lifestyle Podcast. If you like what you heard, go to www.isaiahsaldivar.com for more content, and please follow me on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram @Isaiah Saldivar. See you next week.